Hi, I'm Mike Evans. Welcome to this AAT podcast, which today includes slides to accompany my talking. Please change slides when you hear this sound. Today's podcast is about preparing for the 2008-09 payroll year-end returns. It'll come to you in two sessions, the first about preparation. Preparation should have started already. So what do we need to do now to try and achieve a successful year-end? What are our payroll year-end tasks? Employers are required by law to submit an end-of-year P35 employer's annual return and an individual P14 for every employee. Within 44 days of the tax year-end, which means the 19th of May 2009, that is the statutory deadline. However, extra statutory concession B46 allows employers an extra 7 days to midnight on Tuesday the 26th of May 2009 before penalties are imposed. My advice to AAT members, especially those of you working for your clients, is to work towards the 19th of May statutory deadline and not rely on the extra 7 days, except in emergencies. Other payroll year-end deadlines to be noted in the diary are as follows. The 19th of April 2009 is the statutory deadline for payment of any outstanding pay-as-you-earn, Class 1 National Insurance contributions, and any Construction Industry Scheme deductions. This year, the 19th is on a Sunday, so we have to work to the 17th of April. The 22nd of April, of course, is the electronic payment deadline, the extra few days given by HMRC. But again, we have to remember that payment must be received by the revenue by that deadline, so it's no good handing in a cheque on that date. The next date is an important date, the 19th of May statutory deadline date for the submission of the returns, which I've mentioned already, and again the extra 7 days by concession. Then we come to the 31st of May, the statutory deadline for a paper P60 to be provided to employees. I emphasise paper because that's what the law requires, and it wouldn't be good enough to email somebody a copy. You are nowadays allowed to provide copies or duplicates to employees, but these have to be marked copy or duplicate. Our next deadline is the 6th of July, and there are some multiple deadlines for that day. The 6th of July, first of all, is the P11D and P9D deadline for the return of expense payments and benefits in kind. It's also the deadline for the return of the P11DB return of Class 1A National Insurance contributions, linked to the P11Ds, of course. Also linked to the P11Ds on the 6th of July is the requirement for a third party provider of benefits to give notice to the employee. This could easily happen, say with a garage dealership, where a finance company gives vouchers or other rewards to employees of the garage dealership for selling cars using their finance. Those third-party benefits have to be notified to the employees. They have to be told the cash equivalent by the 6th of July after the end of the year. The 6th of July, again, a significant date for PAYE settlement agreements. These agreements which many employers have with the revenue to deal with taxable expense payments or benefits in kind, which they don't want to report on a P11D. Well, the 6th of July is the final date after the end of the tax year by which a PSA agreement has to be signed. And importantly, it's a date by which an agreement previously signed could be amended. We next come to a very important date, the 19th of July statutory date for the payment of Class 1A NICs. Again, if you're looking at the slide, you'll see I've got in red the 17th, because the 19th is on a Sunday. And again, in brackets, the 22nd is the electronic payment deadline, which is very useful if a client misses the first deadline. I have a question mark against the 31st of August deadline for the PAY settlement agreement calculations. The reason for the question mark is that many tax offices will issue an agreement with a 6th of July deadline for the calculations to be submitted. That is not a statutory deadline, and in every case that I deal with, I will have the agreement signed on the basis of being given until the 31st of August to produce the computations. Certainly my clients tend to need more time. And what we have to recognise is that we have to work to a payment date, as the slide shows, of the 19th of October 2009, again 22nd of October for electronic payment. That's the payment deadline for the PAYE settlement agreement, Class 1B NIC and the income tax that's payable on a grossed up basis. Well, what about help from HMRC? Let's have a look at what help and guidance is out there. And to be fair, there's quite a lot. We should start off with the employer pack. And by the time you're able to listen to this podcast, you should have received yours and your clients should have received theirs. They were due to be issued by HMRC between the 16th and the 27th of February 2009. And at the time I speak, I've already had a couple of employer packs myself for my clients. What does the pack contain? Well, first of all, it includes the award-winning employer CD-ROM for 2009. I'll talk a little bit more about that and show you another slide in a moment. We then have issue 31 of the employer bulletin. And for those of you that attend the CPD courses, you'll remember me saying, open the envelope, read it, it's quite useful. It has news for employers and advice on getting ready to send your 2008-09 employer annual return. It's also got amongst its list of contents information on the pre-budget report, details about statutory payment rates for 2009-10 and the new employment and support allowance. Still not filing online, so it's got some details for you there. It talks about approved payroll software, protection of pension rights. Are you an accountancy service provider? Well, aren't we all? Recording national insurance contributions from April 2009, what we need to know. Important changes to the national minimum wage from 6th of April 2009. And then more information on taking care to avoid a penalty, avoiding and resolving workplace problems, tribunal reform and internal reviews, and working tax credit. Finally, there's the employer diary, which is quite useful, and the helpline and order line numbers. So that's the employer bulletin, the February issue, which you really should read when you get it. And if you don't get one, you can download it off the Revenue website or order it from the HMRC order line. And that's the next thing in the employer pack, a printed version of an employer order line order form. I have to say I don't use the paper version. I do it online at, as you'll see on the slide, www.hmrc.gov.uk/employers/orderline. So order what you will need now. Don't leave it till the last minute. So please, let's avoid any last minute panics. Well, still on the theme of HMRC help and guidance, the next slide will show you a picture of the opening page of the employer CD-ROM. As I said, I think it's very good, very useful. I have it downloaded on my PC in the home office and I have it downloaded on the laptop so that as I go around the country, I can easily access the forms and the help books. I can look at information and the guidance that we have there. It's got the online services, calculators, employer database, which many people don't use, but I find it quite useful, especially for doing examples at the AAT courses. It's got the learning zone and again a diary and some payroll basics. So I recommend it to you. It's very useful. It costs nothing. And again, if you haven't had the employer pack for 2009, you can get the CD-ROM by ordering it off the website. We have the help book E10 finishing the tax year up to 5th of April 2009. Very useful when we're coming to do the end of year returns. We then have the help book E11 starting the tax year from the 6th of April 2009. And we must remember that preparation for next tax year has to start now, not leaving it until the 6th of April. Next, I'm pointing you out towards the CWG5 Class 1A NICs on benefits in kind. Many of you will have heard me say before, it's one of my favourite booklets, and in particular, Appendix 1, Common Benefits, which is particularly helpful in deciding whether NICs are due, and if so, whether Class 1 or Class 1A applies. And then in a few months' time, when we start talking about P11D completion, it'll tell you where to, on the P11D, the particular expense payment or benefit is to go. We have the CWG2, Employer Further Guide to Pay-as-You-Earn and National Insurance Contributions, quite a lengthy booklet and with more detailed advice on many things that may affect payroll year end and the reporting requirements. We have the 480 Expenses and Benefits, a tax guide, which again will be very useful for you when it comes to dealing with P11Ds in a few months' time. And the 490 Employee Travel, a tax and NIC guide, which again is extremely useful in helping us decide what expenses are taxable, what expenses perhaps have to be reported for payroll year-end purposes. Also, in terms of HMRC's help and guidance to us, we've How to Avoid Mistakes, which you can access through the Revenue website at www.hmrc.gov.uk/commonerrors, and some other help and support at www.hmrc.gov.uk/pay-as-you-earn-online. All good stuff to help us get through preparing for payroll year end. Well, why is the annual pay-as-you-earn return required at all? Well, first of all, it's to summarise the payments and statutory deductions made during the tax year on the Form P35. It's to balance the payments of pay-as-you-earn tax, the student loan deductions and national insurance contributions due to HMRC against those deductions made during the tax year. It is to back up the P35 return with details of each employee's or pensioner's payments and deductions on the individual forms P14. Very important to remember that a return must consist of just one P35 and at least one valid P14 per PAYE reference. And again, we must remember that the return has to meet the HMRC's published quality standard, or it is likely to be rejected by HMRC. All employers with 50 or more employees or pensioners on their pay-as-you-earn reference number must file their P14s and P35 online for 2008-09. And of course, many of you and your clients have been doing this now for some years. But we have to remind clients sometimes the failure to do so will incur a penalty based on the size of their payroll, and penalties are awarded for each pay-as-you-earn reference number. So, first of all, we have to think, do you or your client need to register for pay-as-you-earn online filing? If you don't have to, do you or your client want to register for pay-as-you-earn online filing? The online filing incentive payment for 2008-09 is only £75 and it's the last of them. But compulsory online filing is coming soon, so maybe it would be a good idea to register this year. It is very important not to leave registration until the last minute, because it takes a little time to get the registration, the activation PIN, and have it set up. And also very important because payroll year end filing is a once in a year thing. We need to check that we have our username and password, which perhaps we haven't thought about for the last 12 months. I can assure you I checked mine for my payrolls before I started to think about doing this podcast. So let's check that we've got them, test them, make sure they work, and be ready to take some action if they don't. The next slide you should be looking at is the homepage of the HM Revenue and Customs. Welcome to HM Revenue and Customs. And what we've highlighted there in red is the two places where you can access pay-as-you-earn online. The most obvious one is the one on the left-hand side where it says do it online, and you've actually got the pay-as-you-earn online button there, which you click on. But at the top right there, you can click on online services as well. And then we'll get to the next page. On this page, you can see welcome. Do you have a user ID and password? And if you're already registered, you should put in the user ID and the password and log in. There's some boxes to click there if we've lost the user ID, if we've lost the password, or the activation pin is expired. And I know from painful experience that this happened to me when Persian Online first came in. So again, good reason for doing it early. If we're not registered and we want to register ourselves or a client for the first time, click on register, and then the information that we will need will be the employer's PersUN reference and the employer's accounts office reference, and you can go ahead and then register. Only the P35 and P14s must be filed online for each pay-as-you-earn reference number. So that's the compulsion. P35 and P14s, they're the ones statutorily you've got to file online. Important again to remember, only one P35 per pay-as-you-earn reference. There is now this year an option employers can choose to send the P38A online if they want to. If you use a payroll bureau, who will submit the annual return? There have been problems in the past with confusion between payroll bureaus and employers. The payroll bureau can and often will submit the P14s, perhaps using electronic data interchange, but will you have to submit the P35 separately over the internet? If you do, are you registered to do that? Remember, you must submit the P35 online if you have 50 or more employees. Also, it's important to remember to send the P35 as the very last item after all the P14s have been submitted. And the clue there is that if you have to amend any P14s that have already been sent, you can do that before you've sent the P35. You can't do it after you've submitted the P35. You've then got a more lengthy process to go through. Well, guidance from HMRC, one of the first things, is there a need to send a return at all? It's only required if there's at least one P11 deductions working sheet in existence. The HMRC guidance says that deductions working sheets are only required where, firstly, your employer has given you a P45 Part 3 with a date of leaving in the current tax year. Secondly, you pay someone at or above the lower earnings limit. Next, you deduct tax on their earnings. Obviously, we'll need a P14 then. And then we, that is HMRC, issue a code number and you operate it against their pay. Contractors in the construction industry should submit a P35 if they're a limited company and they need to report an amount in the CIS deduction suffered box, which is box 28 on the P35. Contractors should note that box 23 is for the total figures entered on the CIS 300 monthly returns for 2008-09. And it's important you cannot use this box to correct any errors on your monthly returns. Too late to do that. You have to contact the CIS helpline, my favourite number, 0845 366 7899, to adjust any monthly return entries. You can't use the P35 to do that. Now, we've only to send one return for the same pay-as-you-earn reference. That's quite important. There is the option of sending your return in parts, that is the P14s separate to the P35, but will your software allow you to do that? If you don't know, you need to check with your software provider. If you are going to send P14s in parts, perhaps because there's so many of them, or perhaps because you've got different branches around the country that are going to be submitted separately, each part must have a unique identifier to avoid them being overwritten by a subsequent batch. Very important, please do not send a P35 with each batch of P14s. I've said it already, we only need one P35 and that should be submitted last after all the P14s. Otherwise, what will happen is that HMRC will treat the first batch as the return and then will reject any later returns. You must confirm how many parts have been submitted, and the number that you're given is not the number of P14s and it doesn't include the P35. So if you've got five batches of P14s sent, that's the number, not six including the P35, and the number of P14s isn't reported at all. So remember, a complete return means the P14s and a P35 for each pay-as-you-earn reference. You can do a test submission online if your payroll software allows you to do that. My understanding from payroll people is that it's not very popular, but where tests have been used, there have been problems. So you may need to check, first of all, with your software provider to confirm that it will allow you to submit test submissions. HMRC do encourage the use of test submissions, but you must remember to make the final live submission. If you do a test submission and get confirmation that it's okay, that isn't an acceptance of the return. You then have to submit the final live submission. Please remember that. It's important to remember that if you filed online last year, you won't receive a paper P35 this year. And of course, by now, the accounts office would have issued you with a P35 in paper form if they were going to send it to you. You will need to contact your pay-as-you-earn tax office if you want to change from online filing to paper filing, although I shudder to think why anyone would want to do that. Employers must file online, remember, if 50 or more employees are on the payroll. I've mentioned the E10 help book finishing the tax year before. That provides guidance on paper form rejections. It's also important to remember errors must be corrected and resubmitted by the 19th of May 2009 statutory deadline if the late filing penalty is to be avoided. Paper and magnetic media returns will be rejected for failing initial quality checks. They must be corrected and resubmitted again by the 19th of May 2009 deadline if the late filing penalty is to be avoided. What we understand is that detailed review of paper magnetic media returns will not be made until after the 19th of May deadline, so the statutory deadline will have passed and it'll be too late to make amendments that avoid penalties. Please remember that. When you are filing online, what you or your client should have already received by now is an online P35 notification. Again, I've checked this year, I've had a number of notifications. It comes in an email which says, please be advised that one or more employer notifications to complete a PAYE annual return P35 have been issued. If you access your PAYE notices and reminders through the HMRC website, it then tells us to go online and select Pay As You Earn for employers, log in and select Pay As You Earn online, select employer notices on the notice summary, and it says don't reply to this email. Very straightforward, you can do that. And if you do that, you'll then come to the next slide. Apologies that this slide isn't that easy to read. This is an actual notice where I've changed the name of the employer for confidentiality purposes. But this again just sets out to us that according to my records, you did not use our paper P35 last year, sending your return online. And as a result, we're not sending you a paper P35 this year. But it's a warning that the law requires us to submit a P35 and P14s by the deadline and basically given us notice that we've got to do that. I tend to print these notices out and give a copy to the client so that they're well aware of the responsibility and a reminder for them of the deadlines. A few points that I want to cover on national insurance because it's very important. Many of you will have heard me say before, tax and national insurance is not the same. Pay as you earn and Class 1 national insurance rules are not exactly the same. Pay as you earn is cumulative, Class 1 national insurance is not. So first of all, on national insurance, check the national insurance contributions category letters are correct. Category X applies if there's no NIC earnings. And often payroll software will default to Category X if there's been no NIC deductions. But of course, there may not be NIC deductions if someone's earnings reach the lower earnings limit in any week or month. And if that does happen, there will be a requirement for there to be a P14 and Category X should not apply. Another point to consider is will there be any evidence to justify any lower rates of national insurance contribution rates that have been reflected on your payroll? Do you have any people over the age of retirement, where an age exception certificate number CA4140 should be held on file before you operate the lower rate deductions? Do you have any married women on the lower rate of deduction, where they should have had a certificate on your file, and where I've always advised AAT members, you must ask them at least once a year to confirm that they're still entitled to the lower rate. There's not many of them left. Do you have anyone where a deferment certificate was issued for 2008-09 to justify not making the normal deductions? One point that catches a lot of people out is for directors' national insurance contributions. You have to recalculate directors' NICs at the year end if the annual earnings period was not used in calculating their NIC deductions. That can be a problem if there's been bonuses paid for directors, and certainly it's a problem if a director has left partway through the year when the national insurance deductions should have been recalculated. So one of your year-end checks is have a look at directors' NIC, recalculate using the annual earnings period, not the normal one, for ordinary employees. Another NIC point that catches people out, has there been any employee loans which have been written off? Written off and where they'll be reported on the P11D, but if they are written off, there will be a Class 1 National Insurance Contributions liability. A point to look at. Now, what about potential PAYE failures? Something I like to look at every year in terms of preparing for payroll year end. Have we had any tax-free termination payments made in 2008-09 and were they correctly made tax-free? Obviously, it's regrettable, the credit crunch and the effect it's had where lots of people have lost their jobs. So there will have been many genuine redundancies, and payments made under statutory redundancy schemes should be exempt from tax, providing it was a genuine redundancy. But you may want to consider whether any of the tax repayments made ought to be reviewed before you close down. Have you any students where a P38S has been signed? Well, first of all, if you've a student and you've not deducted tax, do you have that signed P38S form? They could have been required to sign a second P38S form after the 7th of September change to the personal allowance. Again, did you have a student earning more than the old personal allowance limit but less than the new limit? Did you get a second P38S sign? And again, for every student where you've not deducted tax, where you've used code NT, you should check that earnings did not exceed the personal allowance limit. What about petty cash payments, which haven't gone through the payroll? Is there casual labour where you should have operated pay as you earn? Have there been any round sum allowances or per diems that are not covered by a dispensation and where perhaps you should have operated pay as you earn? Non-receipt expenses can be a problem where perhaps they should have gone through the payroll. And something that regularly crops up with HMRC on their inspections is the payment of mobile phone and Oyster card top-ups, £20 a month, £30 a month, that sort of thing, which if they're not backed up by evidence of the business calls or the business trips, HMRC would be looking for pay-as-you-earn and Class 1 national insurance contributions. On the expenses side, are we paying cash for home-to-work travel, which should have gone through the payroll? Are we paying cash for other personal expenses, which should have gone through the payroll? Through the purchases ledger, do we have people who have been treated as self-employed who should be on the payroll? Again, it's a difficult area and one to look at this late in the year. Perhaps it is difficult, but we ought to consider it. Is there anything else that has missed the payroll that we ought to be looking at before we close down this year? Coming back to this issue of Class 1 national insurance, and it's one that we'll deal with more in detail on the P11D podcast and indeed the P11D CPD courses, but it's this question of whether Class 1 applies or Class 1A NIC. And if I just quote from the P11D that says, employers pay Class 1A national insurance contributions on most benefits. These are shown in boxes which are brown and have a Class 1A indicator. We then have sections B, C, E, M and N of the P11D are blue boxes and they don't attract Class 1A national insurance contributions. Section M is the only one on the P11D, which is a dual choice section, as you can see from that slide. Is there any Class 1 national insurance to be included in the payroll before the payroll year end? Couple of examples, school fees. where it's not the employer's liability to pay the school fees, and therefore Class 1 national insurance contributions should have been paid through the payroll, even if the school fees are reported on the P11D. Another example we might come across, medical insurance. If it's a company scheme, fine, Class 1A, it's on the P11D in the normal way. But if it's the personal medical premium paid by the company, we could have a Class 1 liability. There's my good old friend, the CWG5 booklet, Appendix 1, Common Benefits, to give us some guidelines on that. Well, in summary then, this session has been about preparing for the payroll year end. So I've tried to point out some things that we need to do in preparation. The registration for online, if we're going to do that, checking that we've got the username and password details if we've registered previously, and looking at the deadlines and making a note of those deadlines to ensure that we do things within good time and we can get the returns off accurately and on time. Pointed out the help from the revenue, and we've looked at so far the sort of common errors and things that might arise and things to avoid. In the next podcast, what we're going to do is look in detail at the actual completion and submission of the forms themselves. For now, thank you for listening.